listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host here for session number 24, by Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing good. Glad to be here and excited to talk about some Cardinals. Finally, a little bit of life has been breathed back into them, so I'm doing good. Yeah. How's OJ?
Yeah.
I'm also doing very well.
Something. Glad to hear that. Yeah. Been exciting, and that's a Paul Goldschmidt stolen base. Did we just get a run off that?
Yeah, catcher threw the ball away, stealing second.
That ball got out. Cardo just got it right. Yeah, sweet.
Nice.
That's a little St. Louis baseball. I love that because Mercado immediately started breaking down the line when the ball went through. Not to the fact that he was gonna go, like, because that's like a little league steal. You know what I mean? Of home, it's like you send the runner from first to second, if the catcher goes, then like literally, you know, you're gonna walk home. You know, but that is how the Cardinals play their game, and the fact that Goldschmidt was safe as well, awesome.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about our St. Louis Cardinals and how they're on the uptick right now. Read some statistics to you guys here. So since the last time we talked, literally last week, in that seven day stretch or whatever. We had six games. We went 5-1 with a that included a sweep of the Red Sox and a win in the series over the Brewers. In that series, we've now won three series in a row, dating back a little bit before that session. So remember, we talked
about the Cubs. Yep.
Right, exactly. Last session that we were needing to try to get to that 87 wins for the wild card spot or win the Central. That was 62% of our total remaining games. We have won 83% of those games since last week. So, guys, are we going to come back? OJ, let's start with you. What do you think is going on here? I mean, do you think that the Cardinals are finally starting to click here, or is this just a flash in the pan?
I mean, I think they're starting to click. I mean, it's all going to come down to starting pitching at the end of the day, but the other fast of the team have brought themselves together, and the starting pitching has been better than it was. So at least they've been on a good run, I should say.
Yeah.
Right. So now apparently they're going to six-man rotation, at least for some amount of time, at least till they get a couple days off, I guess. And they got Liberatore up,
nice,
who showed out pretty well last night. What do you do? Like five innings pitch, two walks, five strikes. Yeah. Something like
five and one third inning, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
He's really scoreless, though. Yeah.
But, I mean, so he looked pretty good. He has much improved stuff. His fastball is a couple miles per hour faster. I mean, he's got that sweet curveball that he got a lot of people out on. And really, the main concern, I guess, is that he showed a little bit of command issues last night. But he also is working with heavily modified pitches from what he's used to. So it's reasonable to think he could settle down. And in AAA this year, he was running like a 30% K rate and like 9-something% walk rate. So that's high walk, high strength.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I did read that for AAA, dude, that I thought it was even higher than that for the strikeout percentage. I thought it was like 34.
It might be. I just remember it was in the 30s. Like, yeah.
Which is incredibly good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been bulking up, I know, over, you know, the offseason and whatnot. And you can really tell, you know, with his fastball, like you mentioned, OJ's, you know, he's in the upper 90s now. And, you know, that's, I think, he's definitely making an improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kind of hopeful, like, with these modifications he's made, I'm hopeful that if his command starts coming back around, because he was like, that was one of his primary tools when he was drafted and as a prospect. It's like, oh, this guy's got great command.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember he used to have a wicked curveball, yeah, at one point.
Yeah, well, and he still does. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If that comes back after he gets used to the new shape of some of his pitches, because he changed pitch shape and gets used to having the harder fastball, which also sinks less because he's got more spin on it. So once he gets used to locating it all and everything, he could be like a real scary pitcher. Like he could actually be like number two kind of guy. It's starting to look like. So I mean,
one of the things that
you can see it.
And one of the things that really stood out to me yesterday, and something that I haven't seen him before really on the major league level, is the comfortability. You know, as you said, he definitely didn't have like, I wouldn't say like pinpoint command, but he looked really well in that aspect of things. But my thing about it is he just looked very comfortable on the MLB mound. You know, like last year when you kind of saw him flash through the pan, like, or was it the year before? I can't remember, but it was either last year. And did Nava just hit a home run?
Yeah. Wow. Holy shit. I was going to say, the dude's on fire. I mean, it's unreal. After hitting 1,000. He hit his 1,000th RBI last night. And here he is just on this home run. Just, oh my God. Our offense is just incredible lately.
I have a little bit about Arenado a little bit later on, but since you just brought it up, Adam, about his 1,000th RBI, his 1,000th RBI is the third fastest in MLB history.
Yep.
That's freaking insane. Wow. Anyways, so getting back on Libitor, you know, I feel that he just has that comfortability that we haven't seen before. And to me, it almost kind of flashed a little bit. It just reminded me of like younger Wainwright, not to that level, but where he's just like, all right, man, listen, I may not be able to like throw a heat, but I'm going to get your ass out. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what it reminded me of. And I did like to see that Libitor was around Waino the rest of the game after he got pulled and was talking to him the entire time.
Yeah. Because, no, he does have that wicked curveball, man. So that's kind of similar there, you know. But Libitor is throwing 95 now. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Waino's got nothing on him there.
Yeah. Yeah, in addition to all these, like you were talking about, though, you know, we're talking about all the pitching and whatnot, but obviously our offense has just been really on fire, and we continue to see it even tonight with the series opener with the Dodgers. So it's been great to see, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, seems like everything's kind of coming together for a change, so thank God. Because it was before, it was like, okay, we have a little bit of offense, but our pitching is completely, you know, shit. The past, you know, well, you know, past couple of games, you know, overall, like ERA was like around 0.5. And like, it's just nice to see, like, while we're hot in one area, we're also picking it up elsewhere as well. You know what I mean? So it's just nice to see kind of like everything jive for a little bit. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask you, you know, do you think this is a, you know, just a flash in the pan, or do you think that this is the Cardinals starting to click together? It sounds like you kind of already answered
it
a little bit.
It seems like they're somewhat coming together. So part of it is, obviously, some of the mismanagement and some very odd decisions early on. It seems like they didn't really know what the hell to do. You know, Ollie and all of them were just kind of making some knee-jerk reactions. It seems like, from what I'm hearing, that in the on the locker room, you know, Goldie has really stepped up, started to kind of lead the team, as you know, as a, at least, you know, the way Yadi did. And I think that those guys are kind of like waking up and realizing what they need to do and how they need to step up. You know, I think it was a big eye opener for them to go out there and actually get booed finally by our fans, which is, they're not used to seeing that, you know. And it seems like maybe that, you know, put a little fire under their ass a little bit, maybe. So we'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah, yeah. Did you guys see Wainwright's comments about the boos?
Yeah.
I thought that was a very well like laid out. I mean, Waino is always really good for just being smart. Like, he's a very smart guy. The way he talks about it, I mean, he just said, listen, we deserve to be booed. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's the first time I've heard that. He's like, it kind of like, I thought they might have been like saying Newt or something, because, or something different.
Yeah, and you're not like, used to hearing that.
Yeah, and he's like, right, all of a sudden they hit, and he's like, oh my God, we're getting booed.
Yeah.
And he's like, at first, you know, I'm like, what the hell? He's like, why are they booing us? And then he's like, he's just like, well, let's be real here for a minute.
They deserve it at the time. So, yeah. It was getting embarrassing. It's like, come on, guys. We're a well-established, you know, well-ran organization overall. The Cardinals have always been that way. And it just seemed like we were being ran by amateurs for a while.
Yeah.
It just felt that way, you know?
Yeah, there's some weirdness, sure. Like, I honestly... This is probably unfair, but I honestly think it is kind of like, you know, the turnaround kind of coincided when Waino got back, right? So
yeah,
it kind of feels like, you know, he sat Ollie down. He's like, come on, man, you got to change the way you're doing shit. Because, like,
Right. Everything
just kind of started to gel again. Because, I mean, early in the year, people were – I mean, we couldn't even field a ball consistently. Like, hit might get dropped. Somebody might –
ridiculous.
We're running into each other in the outfield.
It's like freaking watching Little League for real.
And actually, like horrible league. And OJ, I'm so glad you brought that up about, like, you know, we had people running each other in the outfield and stuff like that. Because here's the thing. So, you know, as I mentioned before in the show, definitely mentioned to you guys, I play softball. It's one of the things I really enjoy now, right? Well, I'm on a winning team. So I'm on my cousin and my, it's kind of, I'm not going to get into it, but on my cousin's team. And, they are a very good team. I'm one of the, you know, younger guys on the team, one of the faster guys on the team. I used to play on this other team. And, you know, that was actually, I played with Danny, if you guys remember him, as our little guest star, the guy that played a lot of international soccer and high level soccer. I played on a team with him and a bunch of, you know, some of my other friends. Nothing against those guys. And I love playing with them, but they suck. And, like, we were good at one point, and then we just got really bad when we lost a few players and somebody broke a bat. Dan, if you're listening, I'm sure you're laughing at that, because everybody was just raking with that bat. But anyways, it was to the point where we weren't communicating with each other and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, so out in the outfield, we just weren't communicating. Nobody in the infield was covering out. You weren't seeing, like, everybody throwing up, like, one out, two outs and stuff like that. And yes, that's so Little League, but it just shows a team in sync. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I started playing on this team, and obviously we're doing better, but I drew energy off of, like, the communication side, and I just wasn't used to it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm fielding a ball, and it's a simple pop fly ball, and I got my cousin who's playing the other center field position with me just saying, hey, back up just a little bit. Or as I'm about to catch the ball now, because I'm comfortable with it, I go, okay, where am I going? You know, as I'm looking up the ball, and he's like, go 3. So now I know immediately I'm going to catch that ball and throw the third. I just didn't see that communication. I literally just saw – I think Brendan Donovan, who's playing second for us tonight. Yeah, Brendan Donovan. So Brendan Donovan is, you know, playing second base, and just a pop fly ball out in right field to Mercado, right? He's immediate, like, you see Donovan running out and is pointing straight up. Mercado already knows it's there, but he's still, like, communicating to him. You know what I mean? Like, even at the professional level, I think that's so important for team camaraderie rather than just
fundamental
stuff. Yeah.
As a team so long, so you have to play as a damn team.
Yeah, exactly. I think it goes so much into it where you start building that trust and you have that, again, that camaraderie to as well, and you're all part of it. And it makes you feel like even though you're not contributing, maybe you are contributing, if that makes sense.
For sure.
Yeah. Because that was the other thing I was going to mention is during this hot streak, that kind of had all cleaned up all of a sudden too. Like,
just
doing things like they had the year prior. So it's it's very encouraging to see that, of course, until tonight when you had a collision of outfielders. But of course, one of them doesn't usually play the outfield, so it's a little more forgivable. And feel bad for Tommy Edman because I had to take him out of the game. So
yeah. And the thing about it is, like, you know, stuff like that does happen even on a really good team, but just doesn't happen nearly as often or, you know, as frequently and stuff like that. And it doesn't really, you know, may give them an extra base, but
Tommy held on to the ball too. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's like, well, okay. It, shit happens, but at least, you know, you made the out. So
got the out.
It matters, right?
We'll see him back soon though.
You sound like me when I'm trying to justify taking a knee when I'm sliding into home plate, taking a knee to the forehead.
It's like, oh, I'm going to wind up in the hospital, but at least, you know.
Beer league softball. I'll be like, I bet I was safe.
You're in the hospital, but at least I was safe.
Yeah.
I did send that to, I said that to a couple of my buddies. I'm like, yeah, so this finally happened. I end up in the hospital because I'm known to, like, I play hard and I get injured every single game from, like, sliding.
Literally every single time.
They're like, were you at least safe? I go, what do you think? They're like, yep, you were safe. And your dumbass played the rest of the game. I'm like, you know it. So it's just funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, having that toughness is part of it too. And the other thing too is, like, when your team is playing so well, you want to come back so much quicker. You know what I mean?
Course,
you just,
for sure.
Like, it goes beyond professionalism because you want to go out there and play with your brothers, so to speak. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so that made it sound like they were they've gone through the trenches. And actually, hold on, OJ, do you remember I brought you to a hockey game? This was back when the Blues were like slightly on the rise, but they still sucked. And their pregame warm up video was like the Band of Brothers thing, where they made it seem like they were going into war with each other.
I forget what era it was though. I do remember that.
Yeah, well, we had Petro because Petro was the one that was talking about it. And it's just like, dude, come on, man. Like, I love you guys, but it's so weak. You are veterans. Stop.
I remember that. Oh, yeah. Remember that intro. I forgot. Oh.
Yeah, I was about to say, because that's back when I had season tickets. But yeah, anyways. I don't know why that popped in my head, but, you know, it is what it is. Well, let's get to the next question here around the Cardinals. Adam, I'm going to start with you. What are the Cardinals doing right now? Obviously, it's beyond this week because, you know, we're 5-1. But even before that, we started showing signs of kind of like maybe somewhat coming around, especially with the Cubs series. Mm-hmm. Before that, we were not doing very well, obviously, getting swept by the Angels and, you know, losing Detroit 3 out of the 4 games. Mm-hmm. You know, so now we're starting.
The level of effort just wasn't there. I mean, I just wasn't seeing that, you know, half the time. It just seemed like we just couldn't get our shit together. And for me, I think a lot of that had to do with our pitching, you know, and the fact is that we weren't holding them accountable. I think they realized that, you know, the pitching was a serious issue, even though Ollie didn't really want to admit it or, you know, accept the blame and instead pass that off to, you know, Contreras. But we soon realized after they corrected that mistake, we're doing great. You know what I mean? Like with him behind the plate, you know, this is the thing, not to get off on this tangent, but the thing is with Contreras, we're not used to a guy that's, you know, a catcher who is, you know, more of an offensive guy versus a defensive guy. You know, we're used to Yachty. And so we have to be used to that kind of style of play. And obviously we invested into him for 5 years and that's for the reason. So things are changing a little bit, but I think that we're finally getting that cohesiveness together. We're finally starting to play a little more as a team. And I think if they, you know, can keep doing what they're doing, we actually have a shot at making the playoffs. But the question is how healthy can we be? You know, how, you know, injuries are prone to be, you know, they're prone to come up from time to time. How deep can we make sure that our lineup is, you know, and especially our starting rotation that we can, you know, go into the summer and continue this going, you know, keep us going and also have somebody ready to go in the wings, you know? So I just hope that from, you know, Ollie's perspective that he's learned a little bit through this rough patch. You know, sometimes you got to hit rock bottom to be able to bounce back. And I'm hoping that's what happened here.
Well, remember,
learn from his mistakes as well. You know,
Tony La Russa's first year, he brought the A's to the World Series, right? Yeah. Didn't win it, but brought him there. The second, and actually in the next two seasons, if I remember correctly, they didn't have a winning season. Mm-hmm. So as you said, sometimes like, you know, you come in there and you bring all this energy and things just click. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, cool, I got this. And then I feel like we're really starting to see that with Ollie, who's thinking that everything from last year is going to work for this year. And it's just not the case.
Things are different. There's different dynamics and things. And so you're going to have to figure that out, you know. And maybe I know we brought it up before, you know, with the, you know, the World Baseball Classic and, you know, shortened, you know, spring training. Potentially they just didn't get, you know, things worked out. I don't know what it is. Specifically, we won't, you know, it's speculation at that point. But the fact is that, you know, they had a rough start and it didn't seem like they had a good game plan on how to recover from it quickly. So that's the reason why we slipped rather, you know, very quick, very hard, very fast. But I think we've learned a lot of lessons, a lot of hard lessons along the way. And, you know, we're going to hopefully be able to rebound from that. Sometimes, like I said, you got to hit the bottom to be able to come back. So,
yeah, definitely.
Well, OJ, let's get to you here. I mean, what do you believe the Cardinals are doing right? Obviously, we talked quite a bit about it here, but is there anything else specifically that kind of stands out to you that, you know, the Cardinals are doing right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're just doing everything pretty much right now. I mean, their starting pitching has been pretty good for the last little stretch. Their bullpen has finally calmed down
and stopped. Yeah, no kidding.
Needs, which is huge. I mean, I even think Ollie's starting to get, I mean, it's obviously a very new trend, but it feels mm-hmm. like Ollie's starting to get a little better at managing the mm-hmm. bullpen. Like, I mean, because I know they're trying to like not get guys up too much, but sometimes he leaves a starter in too long. And that's kind of, yeah. I think, part of the reason we had some blown mm-hmm. leads in the past. So he might be starting to get a little bit better about judging that. Because I do think he left. I was questioning at the time him bringing Montgomery back out for the sixth and the second mm-hmm. series. And it sure would have been nice to sweep them. But, I mean, at the time, I was sitting there like, Montgomery barely made it through the fifth. And he was at 93 pitches, and he was laboring. You know, you could tell he lost feel for a lot of stuff. I was like, I would not bring him back out.
Yeah, right. Like,
trots him back out there and gives a leadoff home run up. So now it's 3-2, and obviously we trailed the rest of the game.
Yeah, you got to learn whenever you're in. Look for the signs that your pitchers are tired, and that you know you're gonna have to put a reliever in. You got to be able to read them and be able to tell. You know. And that comes comes with experience, but, you know, some of it's just common sense, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's something that annoys me. But other than that, I mean, the lineup's finally got a proper approach at the plate, like up and down the lineup. Mm-hmm. For the most part, they're making the pitchers come mm-hmm. to them, like not getting themselves out by swinging at just whatever.
Yeah. That discipline, yeah.
Yeah, so now they're putting up runs, and their starters are going deeper and not getting hit as hard, which is great. Their bullpen settling in, like everything's trending up right now.
One other thing too is that we were notorious for leaving men stranded on base as well, you know, mm-hmm. in our lineup, and it was just killer. Like, oh yeah, so we have a little bit of offense, but the fact is that we left them, you know, on base every damn time. It felt like, you know, we left all those runs out there, and it's like we have all these hits, but we can never get them home, and it's just so damn frustrating, you know.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, definitely. Like last session, we talked a little bit about what you just said, OJ, about Marmol's control of like getting pitchers up and down, so to speak. And that's something that I did go back and kind of try to watch from. There was quite a few times where they got a pitcher, a relief pitcher, started in the bullpen and then end up sitting them down. And that's just got to hurt your rhythm. You know what I mean? Because you're going up and throwing, expecting to go in a game. And it does happen, but not nearly as often as I believe that was happening for Marmol and the pitching staff at that point. So, you know, having that control, so to speak, over them and understanding when to be able to bring them in and like, okay, when, like, so, okay, you know, Helsley only needs 10 throws. Okay, cool. So now I'm going to try to time that out to win, like, I believe we're going to need him actually in. So that way he's not overthrowing, or he's not going to be like, okay, I'm done throwing. Now I got to wait around for a few minutes before I come back out. You know what I mean? It just, it is a little bit of that game. Now, some of that I have to say is, and I believe this is not just Marmol. I believe it's all managers, in MLB, is the adjustment to the pitch clock. Because now things do happen at a lot faster of a rate. And you can't just like, okay, I'm going to send out, you know, we're going to go and talk to the pitcher and be like, okay, listen, man, I know you're at your rope. We're going to have you face this last batter, but string this one along. Okay. So step off the mound, do whatever you got to do just so we have the guy ready to go. Cause he wasn't ready to go before. They don't have that option anymore. You have to be able to pitch at a certain pace and stuff. Right. So maybe that's a little bit of something as well.
No, absolutely. That's a very good point. Because, that's been the problem this year, is not getting guys out early enough. And it could definitely contribute to that. So,
and I definitely think that it also does hurt a little bit for a pitcher. So, as you said, you know, when you saw Montgomery kind of laboring and stuff like that, because you have to pitch at a certain pace. I know when I was pitching and I got tired, like towards the, you know, fifth, sixth inning and stuff like that, I was way more deliberate when it came to like my, you know, my approach. So I wasn't quick pitching anymore because it was, my arm was starting to hurt. I didn't have the feel for any of the spin and stuff like that. So I would come set and ready and kind of like breathe like a few seconds and make sure that I was completely zoned in and I had a feel for the ball before I released it. You know what I mean? So which actually helps as a starting pitcher too, because the batters start timing you at certain ways and stuff like that and start getting ready. And if you catch them now, like when they're not ready, you might be able to get even longer in because they're not getting a hard contact and stuff like that. A little bit of that veteran play and stuff like that. We've seen that from experienced veterans that certain pitchers, they start pitching quicker and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So yeah. Maybe that also definitely took a little bit of them getting used to. And I feel like there's also other teams that have, like Padres is a prime example, right? They're not doing as bad as us, obviously, but they also are having issues with pitching as well. So maybe this pitch clock has really just been a huge adjustment for everybody, and especially for the players that played in the World Baseball Classic, because that was not a thing. You know what I mean? They didn't have those rules. So who knows if that really came into it or not. But I definitely think there's at least you can contribute some of the problems to that, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah. But I also, you know, I also wanted to note that I do think that the Cardinals organization in general has tried to be more conscientious of getting relievers up since Matheny. Because, Matheny would just get, like, three guys up every time.
Oh, my God, dude.
Let's go. You know, have guys pitch entire seasons just warming up.
Well, and that's the thing. OJ, I said it when he was the manager. It felt like he was playing, like, 2K baseball. Where you're just like, okay, you know, like going into sixth inning, the seventh inning and stuff like that, even though you got your start on the mound that's just dominating, you just go boom, 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 press the quick buttons in the D-pad just to get starter or the relievers up just in case, knowing that they're probably not going to, you know, pitch at all. So, I mean, like, that's kind of what it felt like. There's no, like, that you're not going to hurt the video game players. You know what I mean? You're not going to hurt those, you know, characters in the game from doing that. It's just a ready or not. But in real life, that does put more strain and strenuous. And I remember there was one time that they had, I can't remember his name now, but it was one of our long-term relievers that we had, it doesn't matter. But he was literally, as you said, OJ, he was up and throwing for 2.5 innings. And you're like, when are you ever going to put this guy in? Like,
that
I get it.
They were
like
super frustrating too.
As a
reliever. Like that's got to fuck after a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was mostly a starting pitcher, but there was a few times that I did relieve. And I can tell you right now, when I did not get into the game at a, like, when I felt I was ready, it got frustrating because you go, okay, do I get up and throw more knowing that you're putting more like pitches on your arm? Or do you just try to rest and like hope your arm doesn't get cold? Because that's a legitimate thing, man. Your arm gets cold and all of a sudden you got nothing for it. And all of a sudden you go to throw and you hurt your arm, you know, like it's just. There is that, you know, really timing and stuff like that, and the finute that happens there, but is what it is. But getting back to, you know, what the Cardinals are doing right, I do have some numbers here that kind of, you know, illustrate some of the points we've already made. So the starting pitching in this 6-game span here is a 1.83 ERA collectively, which is incredible. Our bullpen in that time is 0.5 ERA. And actually, on average, so, you know, obviously the average of relief outings per session is 0.188, which is very good, obviously. Wow. So I think that has been phenomenal. And obviously, like the bat too, like Nato finally finding his stride here. He's in the 6 games, because I just ran it just for the, you know, since last week. He is batting .444 with six runs, 13 RBIs. One walk, 5 home runs with obviously that five home run streak. Now, I know I was a big component of getting him traded at the beginning of the season, but have you guys seen that Nolan Gorman is tied for second in the NL with RBIs right now? He's actually tied with Nato, crazily enough. He's got, I think it's 24, and he's only 3 behind Pete Alonso for the lead in the NL. Crazy.
That is crazy.
But like, who knows, like, what's going to end up happening here, obviously, with this team, you know, whether they'll be able to make the playoffs and stuff. But obviously, we're starting to feel good, and we're starting to really get to that stretch where we feel that, you know, we're starting to feel better about this team, you know, what they can be and stuff like that. So last point I want to talk about here specifically, whatever. We've already talked quite a bit about it, but has the pitching finally come around? Or do we still need that rotational help? Do we still need to look into the offseason for trading and stuff like that? OJ, what's your thoughts on the starting pitching at this point? You made a mention that we're going to a six-man rotation. Does this mean that we will eventually need more pitching? What's your take?
Yeah, I think we should go and get a starter most likely because, you know, Matt's is kind of falling down, not doing so hot. Don't know if he's going to ever do much again. So probably could use one more good starter and to really make the rotation decent. Because, I mean, Flaherty had an encouraging start last time out. Liberatore had a good start. Like, everyone's starting to have good starts. Wouldn't hurt to add somebody with a lot of talent to it also. Plus, they just got a lot of they have a lot of surplus of other of position players too. I mean, just in your middle infield, you got Nolan Gorman, Brendan Donovan, Tommy Edman, Paul DeJong. And Paul DeJong's good right now, so that's, four guys that are valuable. And any one of them could be playing every day for a team somewhere.
Okay, they're all contributing right now, yeah.
Yeah, so you got that in your middle infield. And then the outfield, we've got Walker coming up. You got Tyler O'Neill, although he's out probably. Carlson's hurt. But, you know, I think maybe you're actually a little thinner in the outfield than you've been in the past, but they definitely have more guys. I mean, because you look at like Juan Yepes, Alec Burleson too. I mean, you got just too many guys that need to be on an MLB team, but not enough at bats. So should convert some of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, especially if you're not going to be in the, the offseason trying to make a big splash on free agency, you definitely need to try to find that through a trade if you can, because it's going to cost an exorbitant amount, obviously, in free agency. So going out and getting somebody might actually be cheaper in the long run, and actually the short term for that matter, by just trading some players where you know you're going to have, a clogged field anyways, right? So that's a very astute point that you just brought up, OJ, is that they probably will still need it. And again, we're going to have like issues because also too, to that point, we got four players right now that are contributing to the Cardinals, could be a starter, you know, everyday starter somewhere. And we saw Mason Wynn coming up the pipeline. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you're going to probably want to make space for him in the future too. So,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so kind of my take on here, I definitely see that, you know, when it comes to, you know, when we get into July and whatnot, we'll probably be seeing some more activity, especially surrounding O'Neill. I know that obviously we've seen some rumors, you know, circulating there, but I definitely agree with OJ that we definitely need to make some moves for some starting pitching. Definitely seen some good stuff out of Libby, but for sure I'd like to see him, you know, maybe be that guy that comes into our starting rotation, especially with Matt and his, you know, his performance lately. So it would be great though if we could get one more solid starter, especially with, you know, we've got Waino who is already kind of on the out and, you know, injury prone as well at this point. So I think we need to get at least one more solid starter. I think that would help really shore up if we really want to make take a shot at the playoffs for sure, mm-hmm. because we know that our offense is pretty solid right now, but when it comes to playoff baseball, you need good pitching, you know? Yeah. And if for us to remain competitive, we have to have good pitching and we have to have reliable pitching. So for us, I think we need to make that move for sure.
Especially in the cold weather when, you know, the bats don't come alive, you know, you definitely need to have that pitching and a control pitcher, meaning a guy that can come in and get you strikeouts and make sure that they're dominating the zone. That would be exactly what we need. So it's going to be interesting to see what Mozeliak wants to do. I read an article about how Mozeliak doesn't want to, because he's gotten burnt off of like the Mike Leake deal and stuff like that. And so they don't want to go out and get like any of this high end talent because they don't want to get burnt. And I'm sitting there going, Mike Leake wasn't a top end rotational guy. He was like, you brought him in to be like your fourth or fifth pitcher. So that I feel like that, like, that just shows you that that doesn't work. So going out and getting a top end guy that you know you can get, like, I feel is going to be much better than going out and trying to consistently get bargain bin players. Eventually your shit's going to fall down because you're just not going to get that quality anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that we definitely need at least one bona fide, you know, top of the order starter. I'm not seeing an ace, but if you just imagine how effective this team would be with another number two, you know what I mean? Not like a DeGrom or a Verlander, but another like guy that can come in there and get you some solid wins. And get you some solid innings and stuff like that. Like, say another like Miles Michaelis, because Miles Michaelis is not like, to me, like what people would consider an ace. You know what I mean? He is not unfortunately really kind of our ace right now. But if you had another Miles Michaelis being Miles Michaelis, this team would just, I think, really unlock in the long run. Well, anyways, we'll keep everybody, you know, up to date, obviously, as the Cardinals continue to try to their comeback here, and hopefully the Dodgers come back here kind of fails, because it's 9-7 now after Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, after that Freeman
grand slam. Yeah, thank you, Cabrera. But it gives up a hit.
Yeah, we had
a walk.
You would think, wow, we've got a great start, you know, 9-2, and then how quickly that lead can, you know, be surmounted.
Evaporate.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Evaporate and very quickly.
I love it how they panned right to Waino too. And Waino's like, son really? Of a bitch, you put in that guy.
Yeah. He's like, really? Come on now. Coming back, bro. And this is what you gave me. This is what you're doing to me, man.
Now it's two.
Like, dude, I held it to two runs. Seriously, man. Yeah.
Yeah. It is what it is.
It is painful.
All right, guys, let's transition here and talk a little bit about our soccer team and STLSC. So currently, they are ranked fourth in the West with a 6-1-4 record for 19 points. They are considered to be eighth in the MLS power rankings, obviously, on a 3-winless streak here with our injuries to Klaus and others here.
Yeah, that's
so
a huge hit for us for sure.
Yeah, so let's just get some general feelings here. You know, Adam, what's your thoughts so far on, you know, STLSC now that we're, let's just say, you know, further on into the excitement, you know, all the like the honeymoon stage is gone, that, you know, the winning streak and stuff like that. How are we feeling about STLSC at this point?
I still think, you know, still very solid team. And obviously, you know, the injury certainly didn't help us. And also there for a little while, too. I mean, I hate to blame it on the you know, on our schedule there, but we were kind of, for a little while, we were running into a rough patch, you know, where we were facing tougher teams per se. We should be starting to get a little easier going forward, but it would be great if we could bring back Klaus, because obviously he was a, you know, pivotal, you know, player, you know, striker for, you know, for us. So having that, you know, missing from our team certainly is being felt, but I don't think that it's time to panic or anything yet. I still think we had a feeling that, you know, things would kind of calm down a little bit. You know, things were obviously, we were on fire there for a while, that winning streak. We set the record and all that, but we knew realistically speaking that wasn't going to be sustainable forever, you know, and we kind of prepared for that. So the fact is though, I mean, if you're looking at the Western Conference, though, we still are, you know, sitting right in the middle of, you know, to play for the final series. You know, we're looking good overall. So I don't think there's any time to panic right now.
Yeah, and you definitely bring up some really good points, for sure, about this soccer club and stuff like that, especially with, you know, injuries and stuff. You know, OJ, what's your feelings right now on this team since we're past that, again, that honeymoon phase, so to speak?
So, I mean, my feelings are still that it's still a good soccer team. I mean, they play pretty well. I think more than anything, they're just missing Klaus, because that's really what it is. They're not getting blown out. They're not playing terribly. They just can't score. And so I think he was a bigger factor than we might realize, because, I mean, it's not like they don't have talent elsewhere. It's just, I guess he's the most – he might be a more talented striker than many people – initially thought
anticipated, right?
Yeah,
or at least, you know, talented with this team, Because sometimes you know how that is you can get a player that only really worked. Like David Eckstein, for example, was awesome for the Cardinals because of how he played. But for the rest of the MLB, probably didn't work out too well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely good to have him because he's got skill, but he's also big. So, like, he's not that you could almost say he's like a poor man's like Holland or whatever that however you pronounce
yeah. it. Yeah, Holland. Yeah, Holland. Yeah.
So similar thing, you know. They both played for teams that like to press high and stuff, and they both feel like kind of a similar role. I mean, because he's always able to get to headers and stuff like that because he's so tall. I mean, you'll see him in the defensive end too, getting to headers before people. So, yeah, I think he's just a really good soccer player.
and I think that he's good leadership too. You know what I mean? Most strikers do not get into the box to defend. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, he does a great job with it. And so, you know, I think that's really kind of what they're missing right now. Obviously, they're an expansion team, so it's forgivable to not have the depth, but obviously they just don't have a guy that can replace him right now. So,
yeah. And that's just one of those things that, you know, we will maybe be able to get to that point where we can actually get some more players or develop more players and stuff like that. Because, again, what, I mean, this entire organization doesn't even know what they are at this point. You know what I mean? You're not even halfway through your first season. You know, so there's going to be time that it takes to be able to, you know, fill those gaps in and stuff like that as well. And it's just going to be really unfortunate, like, if an injury to Klaus is what's going to separate us from the playoffs. I don't think that's going to be the case, but I'm just saying in general, you know what I mean? It's just like with all that, you know, hope and stuff like that. But who knows at this point. But, you know, looking at it, actually, you know, what is needed to make the playoffs? So it's interesting. So the MLS with the expansion team that was awarded to St. Louis has made a change. So first and foremost, they reassigned the positioning. So there's 15 teams out west and I think 14 out in the east. No, excuse me. There's 14 out in west and there's 15 out east because San Diego, if you guys didn't see the new news, San Diego is going to be getting the next team. No, so that really, is, I haven't heard. Interesting. Yeah. So, and it was like some sort of like Indian billionaire paid $500 million as a franchise fee to get the team to San Diego. That's crazy. Yeah. I don't know where they're going to play or anything like that, but that's where
apparently they're not starting for until 2025, I guess. Interesting.
Yeah, that's what they said. They actually said that it's most likely going to be 26.
So that's gonna
because
be
of the because like they're having to figure out you know, like housing and stuff like that for international players and getting visas and getting the entire organization together. And so he's been very the owner has been very adamant that he wants to start in the 25 season. And MLS is like, hey, more power to you. Well, that's a lot to do in a year and a half. Like a lot. You have to set up the entire infrastructure.
For sure. Yep.
But anyway, so looking at the playoffs, so there's 9 teams from each side that will be getting into the playoffs. However, 9 and 8 will face each other for a play-in game, essentially. So they're kind of taking a little bit of the MLB or in the NBA that have this like play-in. I hope they don't do it beyond just these 2 teams. If you want to do it for more, like the bottom 6 teams have like a play-in, that's fine with me. But having 9 teams, because you're already like, you're only at 30 teams. If you include San Diego right now, so there's 29 teams, right? And you're telling me that 18 of them get into this playoffs. That's pretty weak. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. It's good to have that for STL. You know what I mean? But at the same time, that's not a great look, right? But anyways, so I based it off of the last 2 years, or actually last 3 years, for the average that the points are needed for that 9th spot. The average is 43 points. And so to do that, we would need 8 more wins to clear or to clinch that 43 points. So out of the next 23 games that we have remaining on the schedule, we would have to go 8-15. So literally what is that? Like 200. So on a win record. So if we do that, we secure that spot. Now, that being said, to win the West in the past couple of years, it's been 67 points. We would have to go 16-9, which is doable, but I don't know if that is necessarily
to where actually we're win going the to. West.
Yeah, to win the West.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Exactly. It's just gonna be really tough. But you know, Adam, so you know, where do you see us, you know, on a 1-9 spot? So I'm assuming you have us make, so let's start with this. do you have us making the playoffs, yes or no? Like, yes. Do you believe that we can make the playoffs? Okay.
Absolutely. So, we're better than a lot of these other teams that are ranking at the bottom. And, I mean, looking at these standings so far, you know, I think there's no doubt in my mind that we can make, of the at least of the 14 teams in the Western Conference, we can make it in the top nine, unless we just have a complete collapse. But, you know, I don't anticipate that. So, anyway, where do I see us actually finally landing?
Yeah, like seeding-wise. Yeah,
I would say more than likely like fifth or sixth. Probably sixth.
I mean, currently we sit in fourth, which is, you know, a good spot to have. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of where I think, too, is like more just because of injuries and we're going to be facing some of our other rivalries and stuff like that on a more frequent basis. So that the fifth and sixth to me is still a really good showing.
Yeah, definitely. For, especially, you know what I mean? For our inaugural year. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be really cool if we do get like the number four and, you know, it would make sure that we have a home field advantage. Could you imagine a playoff game here?
That'd be incredible. That'd be St. Louis would just go nuts. You know, we would absolutely just go nuts on that for sure. That would be great if we could. But so, I'd see that we're probably going to land in probably a fifth or sixth spot myself, realistically.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I got it to. OJ, what's your thoughts? First and foremost, do you have us in the playoffs? And if you do, where do you have us kind of positioned?
Definitely see us in the playoffs. So. I honestly don't know where they'll be, so kind of depends, but
it's really hard to tell too, especially when you haven't like been watching a lot of MLS and stuff like that, or just soccer in general, and all of a sudden you try to keep up with it, and it's hard because there's games that we thought that we were going to lose and there's games that we thought we were going to win and the adverse happened, you know what I mean? So
yeah, because I mean, seeing how difficult it can be for them to do anything without Klaus. So you wonder if teams don't just work harder to try and isolate him at this point, you know, and since he seems to be the only guy we have on the team with any real touch, ironically. So you could see him being more of like a middling team, but still making them. Like, I still see him making the playoffs for sure. I don't know whether they'll catch fire again or if they're just going to keep kind of playing decent, you know, solid ball. Cause if that's all they do, then I could see them being like a lower seeded, you know?
Yeah. Is your point too. Hopefully to me, I really just don't want to like end up in like the seventh or eighth spot. Cause I feel like it's going to be like a death sentence. Cause we're just going to be facing LA or we're going to be facing Seattle. You know what I mean? So if we can climb into a spot where we feel like really competitive and we feel good about our chances there, then okay, cool. Now that's a different conversation. You know what I mean? Obviously, I'm not terribly too certain if this team is going to be good enough to win a title, but if you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. You know what I mean? You get hot at the right times, who knows what's going to end up happening here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the injuries here. As they're not really starting to pile up, but they are definitely starting to, you know, have an impact on this team. So we already talked about Klaus quite a bit. He was supposed to be out for 2 weeks with a strained quad. It's turned into 3+ weeks. Still real no word if he's going to be come back. He hasn't been training with the team or anything like that. As a guy that's literally suffering through a quad strain right now, mm-hmm. I can tell you that it's an incredibly frustrating thing, because my leg feels fine and then all of a sudden it doesn't feel fine. And I feel like I right now, just, you know, right now talking to you guys, I feel like I can go out and play some softball or run around, play some ball. But I know that once I drive on this leg, it's just going to start hurting like crazy. So it's got to be a very frustrating thing for Klaus, especially when you see your team not doing well without you, you know, or with you, excuse me, or without you. Yes, hold on. So if they're not doing well with him in the lineup. Sorry, I think I stumbled on my words.
Yeah.
You guys see what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but overall, I mean, that's mainly our mainly our major, you know, injury here. I think the only other one
Rasmus Alm. Yeah.
Rasmus Alm is the other one. Those are like the only two that come to mind, I think.
Nielsen, who was supposed to be, is the only other person on the injury report. He was supposed to be one of the starting center backs, but he hasn't even.
I don't think he's ever started, has he? Yeah.
He hasn't, because he's been out since the beginning of the season. He was supposed. He's actually supposed to be He was supposed to come back this month. He had a little bit of a setback, so they're saying hopefully they'll come back in June. So it can kind of shore up our back line, so to speak. But
gotcha.
Like Klaus specifically, it's an interesting thing. So in the early MVP votings, he is ranked third for MVP in the MLS right now. And I'm actually going to read this insert from you guys, right? So because this is actually really funny. The Brazilian striker. So this is actually on MLSsoccer.com. Let me see if I can get the author of the title real quick. Just so, you know, we can give them their shout out. I think it's J. Sam Jones, I think, is the writer of this article, I think. Yeah, it's J. Sam Jones. So he writes for Klaus. The Brazilian striker's 5 goals are set. And this is obviously a little bit ago. Are second in the league so far, and the best player in the team is always going to get votes, right? It's a testament to how good St. Louis have been through 5 games that I don't know how much I'm kidding about that. Either way, Klaus has been fantastic. There's no real reason to think he'll slow down too much anytime soon. Obviously, this is before the injury. And then he also goes on, Klaus has been the face of STL City's magical run so far. Yes, he seems to have mastered the ability to use confusion on his opponents like a psychic Pokemon, but his contributions aren't solely reliant on the other team just giving him the ball. That was hilarious. Like, but it makes so much sense, too. Like, sure. That's how you describe that. Using confusion. Sure. Like a psychic Pokemon for him to just get the ball from the other defenders.
Well, I mean, laughing he's so not the leading goal, you know, goal leader for St. Louis for you know, without a reason. So there you go. So
yeah, but that
and I think probably most assists as well. I don't know for sure, but I would assist, not for us. No, he's I'm talking about for St. For St. Louis.
No, Lowen's got the most right now. I think he's just one off of Lowen's number.
I knew
him. Klaus is at, I think, 4, Lowen's at 5, I think.
Okay.
And Lowen's fifth assist also could have been when Klaus was out. You know what I mean? Gotcha. So I'm not terribly too certain on that front, but yeah. But I just thought that was the funniest thing. Cause that, like, to me, that's one way. Cause we talked about that earlier in like different sessions and stuff like that when early in the season, she's like, how the hell does this defender just pass the ball to Klaus? You know, like that's what it looked like twice. He's seriously going, hey man, I'm open, passing the ball,
Like, he gets him so confused. Like, yeah.
Because like I remember watching that on East. It was actually the second one. It was the one against Salt Lake, Real Salt Lake, where that goal made the not top 10, not because of Klaus, but because of the other guy. Literally just passes straight to him. Just like that's hilarious. ESPN's not top 10. This dude just passes it right to Klaus. And they're like, yeah, man, you're not wearing white today. You're wearing black.
Funny. That's funny.
Yeah.
Play that up as the advantage for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And speaking of Ulm, too, so he's been out since May 4th, and there has been literally no updates that I could find about him coming back at any point in time. It's an abdominal strain. Which obviously can be a really hard thing to deal with. I've never had like an abdominal tear or anything like that, but I've heard they're unbelievably painful. And it's just hard to even walk and do anything because obviously you use your core for everything. You know what I mean? So that's going to be really difficult. I just don't know when he would be able to come back, but it'd be nice to have, you know, him and Klaus come back. But obviously Klaus is what we really need to have back at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be nice, but I think now that, you know, we're going to get the schedule will get a little easier and we'll be back home, that, you know, even with those guys out for maybe, you know, another week or so, I think we'll be all right.
For sure. Well, guys, let's transition here to some of the playoffs that are happening right now. The NHL playoffs are down to 4 teams in the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals. So let's take a look here at the Eastern Conference Finals for the NHL. We have the Carolina Hurricanes that are taking on the Panthers. That is actually happening right now. And I believe the Canes are still up 1-0. Let me double check that. Oh, it's 2-2 now. Yeah, 2-2 in the third. So let's, yeah. So I got the Canes in this one. You know, OJ, who do you have in this series? Who would you root for if you had to choose one of these teams, the Canes or the Panthers?
So if I was choosing who's going to win, I guess I'll go with the Panthers. It's because they're playing really good hockey right now.
Yeah, they are.
You know, Matthew Tkachuk's leading them to – they play a style. They're playing a lot like the Blues did in 2019. And, yeah. And I think that they just won't be denied. So, that's my pick.
Yeah, Adam, who you got?
Still got the Canes. I mean, looking back, you know, at the you know, the second round, you know, while the Panthers did dominate, you know, their series against Toronto, Carolina did the same, you know, to the Devils, you know, they pretty much mopped them up. So I expect this series, you know, going into the conference finals, that this is going to be a longer series for sure. I think we're going to probably see at least a 6 or 7 game series for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is going to be a long series because I believe that both teams are very deep. I believe that both teams play different but very efficient styles, especially in the offensive zone. The thing about it is I believe that Carolina is a little deeper on the defensive side, but Florida has really been shutting down opponents lately. So we'll have to see what ends up happening off that. I'm very surprised that this game is 2-2, but not surprised at the same time. It's kind of weird. It's like almost expecting it because of the playoff, but 2-2 is, you know, for these two teams, which are very good at controlling the puck, it's kind of hard to see that
right now, I mean, it looks like the Canes are out shooting the Panthers 9-1 to start in the third as well. So, you know,
yeah,
we'll see how this third goes. But right now, you know, that looks like Canes are coming out, you know, pretty strong. So,
yeah. And the Panthers do have a very good goaltender in Bravoski as well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if just having a really good goaltender. Well, they have Frederick Anderson too, you know, for the Canes. So you have two really good goaltenders. So it's going to be an interesting series for sure.
Definitely.
Let's take a look at the West. We have Dallas versus the Vegas Golden Knights. I can't stand either of these teams. I'll be first. I'm going to go with the Vegas Knights just because I want the higher draft pick out of the two options. So even though it really doesn't matter at this point, to be quite honest with you, but I'll go with Vegas just so that way you can have 1-2 spots better. OJ, what's your thoughts? Vegas Golden Knights or Dallas Stars?
Same, Josh.
Yeah. Same, moving on. All right, Adam, what about you?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, obviously how I feel about this is I would rather have the better draft pick. So I'm hoping that, you know, that the Knights come through. Obviously not at all a fan of the Knights. I mean, that's tough because it's two teams that I'm just like, you know, I guess I hate really the Stars like a little less than the Knights, but they're both equally on my shit list. So I don't really know. Dude, at the same time, I want them to fucking choke for us. So
yeah. And looking at this matchup, it's like every single time I'm like, all right, I really believe that this is the team that I would root for. Then I start thinking of other things like, man, if the Vegas Knights make it, if Petro gets rewarded by going to another Stanley Cup final, really?
Yeah.
Fuck that.
And I'm already, like, sorry, but I'm just, I can't. I just can't. No. I mean, if I had to, like, if you had a gun to my head kind of situation, I guess I'd put my, you know, my hat behind the Stars, but I really don't want to. I'll put it behind the Stars to be different.
There you go.
I just be different.
I hate the Stars more than the Knights. So I really don't want
to. And then coming obviously coming into the final for me, if we do get to, the, you know, we're going to talk to that point. I'm going to go with whoever winds up winning the Eastern, you know, conference at that point. So.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hopefully, because either way, I mean, whether the Panthers win, the Panthers cool, like the Canes win, great.
For the Canes. So, yeah. For me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't actually mind, honestly, if the Panthers franchise won, because like they haven't won one before, and they've only gone to one final before and didn't show up very well into that. And then they've not really had a lot of playoff success, right? So it'd be kind of cool to see them. Obviously, I'd much rather have the Canes because of Jacob Slavin.
Well, of course.
You know, and a bunch of jerks. Like, you know, I do like that team quite a bit. They play with a good energy too, and they're fun to watch. But
they're a lot of fun to watch, and obviously they've got a great team. So I'm a little jealous. Not gonna lie.
Oh my God! What a freaking flail! I hate you, Reeves. Sorry, I was playing the Lakers game there. for a second. But anyways,
I was gonna say, yeah, Lakers are winning, I think, by the way, aren't they?
Yeah, 72-64 right now.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So yeah, I was gonna say, how is that straw hat going anyway? So
we'll get to that in just a second. I got one more point here to bring okay. up before we actually transition to that. So because Toronto lost to the Panthers in the second uh-huh. round, the Blues have a solidified pick. So we know we're gonna be picking the 10th. We now know that we'll be picking the 25th pick as well, since Toronto is out. So that two playoff. Our two draft picks that we have right now. We do have one more, as we all know, but it's either going to be 32nd, 31st, 30th, or 29th at this point. Gotcha. So we'll have to figure it out from there. But, you know, hopefully that happens next round where Dallas loses. So then maybe we can get a little bit of a higher pick and maybe get the 29th, who knows, but... All right, let's get to that NBA straw hat. So, at coming down to it, as they are into the conference finals here, the leader of the straw hat is Adam with two teams. Yes, OJ sir. And I both have one, and it breaks down as such. Yeah. So, in the West, Western Conference Finals, we have the Lakers versus the Nuggets. Adam has Lakers. I have the Nuggets. And then in the East, we have the Heat versus the Celtics. OJ, who had both of his last two teams facing each other, so he's automatically in the finals. He's got the Celtics versus Adam's Heat, which has just been on a stupid roll lately. It's just been kind of crazy.
So I'm facing both of them, so all right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But as it sits right now, so the Lakers and Denver are playing each other right now, but Denver leads that series 1-0. And Heat beat the Celtics last night. They're leading the Celtics 1-0, which is crazy for an 8 seed to be in that way. But, yeah, so let's go Nuggets. Let's go Celtics. Right there, OJ.
And right now in game 2, the Lakers are winning over the Nuggets like 74-70.
74-72.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Close game?
Against the Nuggets, because that's one of them cronky teams, right? So.
There you go. Let's go Lakers.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yes. It's like, it's kind of weird because it's like, I hate the Lakers with a passion, and I don't want the Nuggets to win. Don't get me wrong, but I cannot stand the Lakers. So like, I got to pull for the Nuggets at this point. I'm really rooting for the Celtics because like, obviously, you know, having Tatum there, and I do like the Celtics. I've actually liked the Celtics for a minute. It's just not my team. My team has always been the Golden State Warriors. But I've definitely have liked the Celtics. Like when the Golden State Warriors haven't been in, weren't good for 2 years. Like I rooted for the Celtics to win it. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see if, like, honestly though, when I watched a lot of that game yesterday between the Heat and Celtics. Not to get too far in the weeds, but dude, they didn't have Tatum on the ball like at all. They had him as the secondary or setting screens. It's like, how do you not give the ball to Tatum, who just dropped 51 points in a game 7 record? Like, are you kidding me right now? Like, what are you doing? But who knows? Like, obviously I'm not a coach and I don't understand basketball to the level that, you know, most people do. So I'm going to let that one go, but that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've heard that my,
anyways, go ahead.
I've heard
that they do. And Jimmy buckets, man. No. Yeah. And you're 100% right, OJ. You know, Miami does play really good defense. And I think that was part of the reason why Mazzulla, which is the head coach of the Celtics, was trying something different, you know, trying to run him as like a distraction and stuff like that. It's the same thing that Phil Jackson did with Michael Jordan in some of the playoffs. You know what I mean? Is like, he knew that these guys were going to be keen on Michael Jordan. So you run him as a distraction, and that opens up Pippen, that opens up for Kukoc and stuff like that, or even Steve Kerr at that point. So it just, you know, that's what it kind of goes into. And it's a long series, and you know that, you know, hey, we tried something, it didn't work, or, you know, we need to try to do something different next time. But Jimmy Butler is just a freaking assassin, man. Let me tell you, like, I'm not a huge Butler fan, but when he gets, he's like the best way that I can equate it to, quite honestly, from what I've seen. It's going to hurt me to say this, but he is very similar to Patrick Kane. You know, he's good in the regular season, but he is just lights out in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like Patrick Kane is, we all hate Patrick Kane, obviously, here, but we can attest that he is just a different beast when it comes to the playoffs. Like, he just shows up at a different level. And that to me is exactly what Jimmy Butler is. So going to be interesting to see what ends up happening here.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler came through Chicago also. So.
Yes, he did. Yeah, crazy, isn't it? Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and head to our sign off here. So, Adam, hit us up with our socials just to remind everybody what our socials are again.
Yeah, so you can hit us up on facebook.com/thehometownlosers. That's L-O-U-S-E-R-S or twitter.com/hometownlosers. We're also asking our listeners this week, of all of the legendary athletes who have graced the St. Louis sports scene, we want to know who you think is the most underrated or unappreciated. So let's give credit to where credit is due and shed some light on those unsung heroes who deserve more recognition. And hey, if you know you want to hear us take, you know, have our take on this topic, you know, be sure and comment on Facebook or Twitter and tune in next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very good question too, because like, again, I've talked about David Eckstein a lot, I feel recently, but David Eckstein's work ethic is, I think, is something that I just really admire. And I feel that a lot of teams really need, you know what I mean? So that's a, to me, I think if you look at it, like on talent wise, would definitely be underrated. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'd say Rafael. Very,
oh my gosh. Dude, see, that's a total, you're 100% right, OJ, because that is somebody I completely forgot about.
Nick Punto, oh, yeah. Like, come on, man. Those guys are.
Whoa. I got another one. So Taguchi.
Oh, so Taguchi.
Dude, I love So, man. He was my dude. I even had a So Taguchi jersey for the longest time. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fast. Like, could come in there.
Yeah, but and you don't I ever hear like much about him, but man, hitter. He was incredible. Yeah. No. He was.
Yeah, dude. There's a lot of those. So that's a very good question to ask.
We have a lot of underrated players that you just kind of forget about. And they just never got their due, you know, and, you know.
Oh, my gosh. How about Fernando Vigna?
Remember amazing dude, he was for absolutely. 2 years? He was super hot. And all of a sudden, then he's just gone. Yeah. And nobody, you know, ever really mentions him ever again. Yeah.
I was so excited we got him. Yeah, that was
awesome. Yeah, for Vigna.
He was a perfect fit.
Yeah. He had a lot of those guys. Jeez. Ray Langford was another one back in the day.
My dad says Ray Canford.
Ray Langford was a dude when I was a kid. That was my favorite player.
Yep.
Ray Langford down the outfield. My dad used to call him Ray Canford because like he didn't like Ray. He didn't.
Oh, really? You didn't like him? No kidding.
He didn't like him. He didn't like him, and he didn't like John Gant. So we'd call him John Gant. It was just hilarious. Like, so stupid. Dude,
that was a sweet outfield back then, actually.
It really was. Yeah, man. It really was.
Post Willie McGee days, we've been in the center, you know? So.
Yeah, because what? You had like Brian Jordan.
Yeah.
Brian Jordan. Oh my gosh, I forgot about Brian Jordan.
Yeah, dude. That was a hell of an outfield.
It was.
Which one of them was it that played in the NFL also? Was that Brian Jordan? Because I remember one of them just destroyed a catcher.
I think it was Jordan, dude. I think
he did. He played for the Falcons, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah, because he played like tight end or something like that, if I remember correctly.
He did. He played for. He sure did. He got drafted. He was actually selected in the first round of the 80. Or I was gonna say in the 88 draft by the Cardinals, and in 89 in the NFL draft, he was a seventh rounder picked up by the Bills. So
that's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah, back-to-back years. First picked up by the Cardinals, and then the next year he picked up by the Buffalo Bills. How crazy is that?
Maybe that's something we'll do for a segment. Is just like we'll take our most underrated, like St. Louis Cardinals players, because there's so many of them, and we'll create our own starting lineup off of like underrated, and like bring the reason why we chose them. You know what I mean? Like, they bagged this, but they just didn't have recognition. That'd be a fun, be a fun segment to do. All righty, well. Let's get to it. OJ, what's your game of the week?
Well, I hate to bring it back to soccer, but, you know, it's another good rivalry. St. Louis, Kansas City, Sporting Kansas City, those who trademarked the, the soccer capital of the United States or whatever that they trademarked. After people about. I think it's really important to just crush their souls this week. So that's our game of the week.
There you go.
May 20th at 8:30 p.m.
another I-7 or I-70 series. So it's funny because they actually did come out and say this was when they were getting interviewed, it's another I-70 series, which I do really appreciate because Kansas City is starting to, because their attendance is low. Obviously, they're not as great as the team they used to be when they had Zutzi and some of these other, but they're also helping us out by trying to get some, you know, like recognition to that and stuff. And they know that there's a lot of history between the Royals and the Cardinals. So for them to call this another edition of the I-70. I-70s brawl.
You know, that's something that's interesting to me because in every other sport, you know, St. Louis and Kansas City have always been in opposite conferences or leagues, so they like never play each other.
Yeah, that's true. But
in MLS, they're in our league, man. They're gonna be a regular opponent.
Yeah, it's always been Chicago or whatever that we got to play. So
exactly, and this time
So it's really funny that you bring that up, OJ, because I remember in MVP Baseball 2004, that's the one with Albert on the front cover, right? You choose a franchise and it shows, you know, your two, like it chooses two rivalries or rivals for you, right? So like, for example, for the Yankees, it was obviously the Red Sox and then it was the Devil Rays, because at the time they really had a huge rivalry with the Devil Rays, because that's back when they were actually still called the Devil Rays. But anyways, in the Cardinals, yeah, it's obviously the Cubs. And the second one was the Royals. And I'm sitting there going, really? Because we just kicked their ass every time we faced them. So is that really a rivalry or is that just a spanking? You know what I mean? Yeah. But there has been a lot, obviously.
So they haven't been a rivalry for them in a long time. Yeah. I was going to say, there's a picture of me literally.
Our generation, but our parents, yes.
Yeah, there's literally a picture of me like as a little like freak, like I was like 3 months old watching the 85 World Series, the I-70 series, but I don't remember those days at all, you know. I mean, they were going way back, so.
Damn, yeah.
Actually, here, you know what, before we get off here, I'm going to ask you two a real quick trivia question that anybody on the podcast can use, because I thought this was a very, very interesting standpoint. So there has been, there's been two there's been two World Series that have been played for three World Series have been played against teams that are from both from the same city, right? It's New York, it was LA, and the other one was
St. Louis.
And St. Louis,
of course.
St. Louis Cardinals versus St. Louis Browns.
Browns.
Always forgets about the St. Louis Browns. But I thought that was the weirdest piece of like trivia that St. Louis had teams. And they played all seven games at Sportman. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah,
called it the Streetcar Series. Yeah.
Yep. 1944.
Mm-hmm. There's so many people that tend to forget about that as well. But you know, the Browns obviously was where the Cardinals really started, and then obviously the Cardinals came off to something different. But
yeah,
kind of crazy.
Interesting. Another interesting tip. Oh, go ahead.
Well, actually, they were two completely separate organizations always, because the Cardinals were like the Perfectos or something at first, and then they changed their name. Like in the 1800s, they were the Perfectos, and then sometime within, I think maybe also in the 1800s, they changed to the Cardinals.
I was going to say they were originally, I was going to say when they were the Browns or Brown Stockings, I think at one point, because I remember them being the Browns or whatever, way back.
But the Browns they played in that World Series were a completely different.
Oh, franchise. You're talking about that
Browns. Different team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And that's, I think the confusion comes from it, you know, what I mean? Of like when that we had two teams at the same time.
In fact, that team, the Browns that you're referring to actually went on to become the Orioles, actually.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
It did.
So, yep.
So you're welcome.
Interesting. You're welcoming listeners here for the random bar trivia. So next time you're out there and you get that question right, a bar trivia, win some money, please send it our way. You got our socials now.
There you go. And it was also 76 years before another World Series had all of its game played in a single ballpark. And that was, of course, during COVID in Arlington, in Dallas at the Globe Life Field during COVID. There you go.
Yeah, it was. I remember back so in 2000 when they had the Subway Series between the Mets and the Yankees, that the mayor of New York, I can't remember who it was at that point, but the mayor was just like, oh, he was a Yankees fan. So he jokingly like came on a presser and said, we're going to have seven games played at Yankee Stadium. Cause he's like, yeah, cause the Met stadium is infested with rats. And he was joking that he was joking that he had sanitation out there like doing this shit, and people obviously went ballistic because they thought it was true. He's like, guys, obviously it was a joke. Like, calm down.
That was, probably like, Giuliani probably back then, because that wasn't that like right before 9/11. Yeah, it's probably Giuliani.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But probably, I thought that was the funniest thing. I'm like,
yeah, probably lost his notes that way, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that is true. But who knows? It was just, it was coming. I remember him coming down and saying that, and that actually made ESPN. That's how I heard of it, because I wasn't watching anything in political.
That makes
stuff,
sense. But, yeah, yeah, I was gonna say it. Yeah.
I just can't vote for a Yankees fan.
Yeah, I remember Giuliani was a big time Yankees fan. He, you always see him at the games. He always.
So, right, so you're saying you don't like me, OJ? You don't like me?
Yeah, I am.
Damn. Yeah, that was super awkward last year. Not to go off that tangent, but so here it is. We're literally at the Cards game, and he's got his freaking Yankees, like, yeah, he's got, it was a Cards Yankees game, and he had his Yankees. Did you have like your Yankees hat on or something?
I had my Cardinals hat, my Cardinals shirt, but I had my Derek Jeter jersey on, right? And I had it open so everyone could see that I was obviously a Cardinal. Yeah, so the dudes in front of us were like New York fans, and so. I said something. I'm just like, no, what are you talking about? And he turned around. He's like, shut up. And then all of a sudden he turns back. He like double checks me. He's like, you're wearing a Yankees jersey. I'm like, I also have a Cardinals hat and a Cardinals shirt. He's like,
what
are you rooting for? I'm like, well, mostly Cardinals, but I do like the Yankees. Like, that just makes sense. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. But they were cool fans, dudes. Don't get that. Yeah, they were. It was actually a really good series. I mean, but most exciting game I went to at all last season. If you remember that series, we swept the Yankees and it was an incredible game. But yeah,
Yadi's walk off. I remember.
Dude, it was.
Oh no, it wasn't. It was
Yadi's walk off. That was I know which game you're referring to. Yeah. But that was the
home game. Was walk off.
Tons of home runs though. I remember right. It was an extremely high scoring game. Yeah, it was like 22 to.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
18.
I mean,
I got
the scorecard somewhere. Yeah.
It was crazy. The Yankees and us. We were both high scoring games. So anyway. But yeah, I just had to give you trouble for that because you were showing up, you know, with your Yankees gear and.
I told you I was gonna do it, man. Yeah.
You did. You straight up did.
And the dude, like, I explained it to the dude, and he's like, "Oh," and he's like, "I respect that because I grew up such a big Derek Jeter fan that it made me a Yankees fan, especially like the '98-'99 World Series and stuff like that." And he's like, "No, I can." He's like, "I appreciate that, you know." I'm like, "Yeah, but you're still a dick." Yeah. All right, guys, let's go ahead and end this broadcast here.
All right.
So, appreciate you, you two gentlemen. Thank you very much for making Thursday nights awesome. I really appreciate it. Thank you for the listeners as well for all your continued support. You can catch us next week here on the Home Losers podcast. We'll catch you guys later.
This is OJ, and I wanted to thank you guys for listening to the equivalent of three dudes sitting at a bar talking about sports. We'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers.